Do you think people ought to vote? Why? That it? It's just a duty?
No,
I agree, it is.
It would also help better our lives and help express our values and opinions in this country.
So you vote because you care about this nation, don't you, that you live in? And it's a small thing, it seems like, but maybe a very important thing. You care about the strength of our military.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Why? Because you care about the nation, the freedoms you enjoy, enjoying the peace that we have. But I don't think Sally served in the military, or Elizabeth, and maybe several of the men here, I haven't. I don't think they'd take me as an enlisted soldier now. So what can I do for the nation besides vote to make sure it's the kind of nation that maybe God will bless? You ever seen God Bless America? You do, don't you? Actually, the people right here in this room, this kind of people, will do more to affect the destiny of this nation than all of the weapons that exist, than all of the votes that are cast. He may use weapons and he may use votes, but really when God's looking at this nation, he's looking at this. Look, if you will, at Genesis chapter 18. Genesis chapter 18. Look at verse 16. The men, you'll note in the first part of 18, there were three what looked like men. One was the Lord and two were angels. Three men rose up from there and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham was walking with them to send them off. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do?" Now, there's some words I want you to note as we read this text. First of all, the question on the lesson is, what did God consider telling Abraham he was about to do to Sodom and Gomorrah? To destroy them. He was going to destroy them. Now, note these words right here. We start in verse 18. "Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Since," there's that first word, "Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation." So whatever he's thinking about telling Abraham, it was connected to a promise that from Abraham would be a great and mighty nation. And then in verse 19, "For," note that little word "for," "shall I tell him? For I have chosen him so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice." Now here's that next little phrase. So that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he's spoken about him. What did God say about Abraham that he's going to bring upon him in our text? What is the promise referred to? Right there, we started out with it. Make him a great and mighty nation. And so he said, "I've chosen him that he may keep the way of the Lord." Note that. And then, "do righteousness and justice so that." See that? So that. But here's a promise. But it's a conditional promise. It's based upon the righteousness of the nation and God fulfilling this. So, I'm going to tell Abraham what I'm going to do to Sodom and Gomorrah, and it's going to be intended to be a lesson for Abraham to encourage him to do what we've just read about, to strive to instill in his descendants the Word of God, the will of God. So when you get down to verse 26, so God tells Abraham about the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham very concerned. Of course, he's got relatives there. But look in verse 26. Let me start in verse 25. Abraham reasoning with God, he said, look at the end of the verse, "Shall not the judge of the earth deal justly?" So the Lord said, "If I find in Sodom 50, 50 what? Righteous. What's he going to do? I'll spare the whole place. So Abraham pleads with him, verse 27. And so he said, if it's lacking 5, verse 28, he said, I'll not destroy it if there's 45. I don't know how big Sodom and Gomorrah is. They were cities, but they were city-states, independent governments, evidently. Was it 10,000, 20,000? I don't know. But he said, if I can find 45, I'll spare them. Abraham tried again in verse 29. Maybe he knew something about those cities from his interaction with Lot. But nevertheless, he said, I'll not do it if there's 40. Verse 30, if there's 30. Verse 31, now he's dropping by 10. If I find 20 there, he said, I'll not destroy it. And then finally, in verse 32, God said, I will not destroy it on account of 10 righteous people. 10. We've got more than 10 in this building. We've got a whole lot more meeting in other places. Now, whether or not that means God will not destroy America, that I can't tell you. But if I understand this story, that can have more bearing on what God does to a nation than all the armies and the walls they built around the city, all of their protections, all of the planning that was done when the city council got together and decided their future, is the righteous people in it. Why study the family? Where was God going to begin by making this the descendants of Abraham righteous? What is mentioned in our text here in verse 19? Where would it begin with Abraham? He's teaching his children. Family. Family. And so, if you love America, you love the United States of America, and we ask God bless America, there's really nothing better you can do than be a righteous person who serves God. In Proverbs 14:34, we have the question, what exalts a nation and what disgraces it? What exalts it? Righteousness. What disgraces it? Sin. Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 6. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 6. This is Moses' sermon to Israel. So this is God's nation. They're on the border of the promised land. Their history is before them. What will happen to them? And so Moses is preaching this sermon to them about what they need to do to ensure God's provision and protection and blessings. Look at verse 6. He's talking all through here, beginning, we start in verse 1, listen to the statutes and judgments which I'm teaching you. Verse 2, you shall not add to the word which I'm commanding you. Keep the commandments, verse 2. Verse 5, he talks about the statutes and judgments that you should do them. Now we'll get to verse 6. So keep and do them, for, there's that little word again, for that is God's wisdom. Is that what it says? Was it God's wisdom? Yes, but that's not his point, is it? This is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of all the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. With the stupidity that people demonstrate in this country about the family today, the upside down views, the lack of morals, destroying the family, no order in the household, you reckon we look like a wise nation? And so, God bless America. Where can I start? Having a family that's ordered by the statutes and judgments of the Lord. That's why we're having this Bible class. Not simply for America, but because that's the way you can have a family that's pleasing to God. There's a British social anthropologist. They study cultures, social cultures, and how they're impacted and their existence and what happened. A fellow by the name of J.D. Unwin. He spent 7 years studying 80 civilizations. Here's a quote from his work. "When a man is devoted to one woman and one family, he is motivated to build, save, protect, plan, and prosper on their behalf. However, when his sexual interests are dispersed and generalized, his effort is invested in the gratification of sensual desires." Unquote. Who would think that a husband and wife with a healthy relationship could make a difference about the course of a nation? This fellow, not from a biblical standpoint, just looking at history, he said this is what has happened over and over again. The family disintegrates, the nation disintegrates. You've all heard probably of Cardinal Gibbon. I don't think any of you met him. He lived back in 1776 to 1778 when he wrote this work called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. 6 volumes. Massive work. And he said, one reason for Romans' fall, and I quote, "The rapid increase of divorce, the undermining of the dignity and sanctity of the home, which is the basis of human society," end quote. Look, if anybody has any confidence at all in history, these fellows show that history bears this out. But you don't have to depend on secular history. We have it right here in the Bible. And God says how important the family is to the nation. We said here on this next question, based on your observation, how is the deterioration of the family affecting our nation negatively? How is it affecting it as far as morals are concerned?
Well, sin is being normalized.
What?
Sin is normalized.
That's a good way to put it. You know, sleeping with someone without being married. That's just a thing you do in America. It's okay. Divorce? No, we don't like one another. We'll just get another mate. Having affairs? Everybody has affairs, so-called, they say. Immorality. And if people do not respect the relationship of marriage as God ordained, what kind of relationships do they establish? What kind of quote-unquote marriages are people entering into that you don't read about in the Bible? Same-sex marriages, homosexuality, lesbians getting quote-unquote married. And so it's the rise of immorality. And of course, instead of men and women using their bodies for one another, they're on display for everybody in the world. And sensuality is no longer limited to the home environment for everybody. That's what happens to a nation. How about welfare? Are you paying more money into welfare because of the loss of the family? You bet you are. Because there are oftentimes no fathers to take care of the kids. Who's going to take care of the family? Dad's not to be found. Mothers oftentimes don't want their children. Motherhood, in fact, is being depreciated in our country. You may probably have seen magazines, or I don't know if anybody looks at magazines anymore, TV. And so here's this woman. She's got a sad look on her face. She's worn out. What is she? Oh, she's a mother. Oh, here's this woman. She's vibrant and bright and cheery. What is she? She's an executive in a company. So what do you want to be, young lady? Yes, what's being emphasized. And so the family is being deteriorated. And you're going to have to support these people that have no proper means of care. And I'm glad we have a welfare program to take care of worthy people. Of course, it's misused, as we know. What about drugs? Why do people often turn to drugs? They're unhappy. There's no peace. There's no security in the family life. And with young people, often there's no guidance in the home. I wonder how many parents ever talk to their children about drugs in the proper way. And then there's crime. Without the family environment, there's no supervision, there's no training, there's no moral training about right and wrong. There's lack of respect for authority, and all of that leads to an increasing crime rate. And our cities aren't as safe anymore. And then patriotism, we've just read that from history. Without the strong bond to protect my mate and my family that we'll die for. Oh, but this is my third one. Or no, I'm just living with this one. I'm not going to die for this woman or man. And so that's what happens. Patriotism often wanes along with it. So, if there's no morality and responsibility and commitment to the family, it's going to indeed impact the nation. Yes? Good point. No respect for human life. So as a result, a woman has a baby she doesn't want. What happens? Kills it. Abortion, right? But they say, no, that's okay as long as the baby's not born. Of course, it's a living human being. But we'll talk some more about this maybe in the sermon, I don't know, this morning. But if they have the right to take the life of that baby before it's born, what about when it's 1 week old? Look at, man, I don't like this. I don't want this burden. Can they end its life then?
What about when it's 8 years old?
Huh?
What about when it's 8 years old?
Okay. That's right. There's no limit, is there? 3 years old, breaks his leg. I don't want to fool with that. Kill him. Why not? But that's what happens when there's no divine standard to regulate attitude. Yes. Very good observation, Jamie. Jamie's comment, for the record, is if there's no covenant, no commitment, no contract, you lose the sense of obligation. So people just violate their covenant, their contract, either sexually or failure in duty or just severing the relationship. And so that commitment to keep your word, to make a covenant, make it work. You promised it, you do it. Good point, Jamie. Yes.
The lack of morals also has led to what I see a proliferation of children doing murders. I'm talking about 13-year-olds committing murders, 10-year-olds committing murders.
What's wrong with that?
16-year-olds committing murder.
So what? What's wrong with a 13-year-old committing murder?
It's absolutely horrible.
Who says it's horrible? You say it's horrible. Suppose a 13-year-old says, it's not horrible at all. All of my friends do it. I agree with you, Alex, but what's up makes it horrible?
Law of the land and God's law.
God's law. That's it. We're made in the image of God. Now, Keith also mentioned the law of the land. That's lack of respect for authority. But without the law of the land, man is made in the image of God, and another man doesn't have the right to take his life without God's authority. Good point, though, Alex. That's right. And that's breakdown of the family, failure to teach and train. All right. So here's another reason to study the family. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. According to verse 1, end of the verse, what's the impact of the family, possible impact of the family on an unbeliever? To convert them. A soul could be saved. You see the same thing in 1 Corinthians 7. A woman's married to a man who's not a Christian or vice versa. He says, you continue to live with them. Who knows but whether or not the husband or wife will save their mate. That's in 1 Corinthians 7. So there's the impact of righteousness in the family. If a mate will stay righteous in the family relationship, may impact their mate, won by the believer. Also, what? Did I hear somebody say something? Okay. According to 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 4, what's the impact of the family on our relationship to God according to verse 4? Yes. A woman who recognizes her role, even living with this kind of man that he talks about in verse 1, but she recognizes his delegated authority and lives with respect and a chaste life, God is honored. He may not appreciate it. People in the world may not, but God is honored. That's what he talks about in verse 4. It's precious in the sight of God. And according to verse 7, how does it impact the man?
It won't hinder his
prayers. That's right. If the family's not what it ought to be because he's not respecting his wife, treating her with honor, striving to understand what his thoughts and conduct does to her, forget about his prayers. If you forget about his prayers, what about his songs? Prayer then becomes synecdoche, doesn't it? Apart from the whole. His whole worship is vain. Isn't that right? You see that in the book of Malachi. He talked to the priest. He said, I don't want your worship. Look what you're doing to your wives. So we want to separate the family, put it over here in a corner, and the church over here, and our church activities over here. No, they go together. They're impacted. And so you can see the importance of the family on our relationship to God. Look at Titus chapter 2, verse 4. What can a godly woman in a godly family, what impact can that have on her service to God, according to verse 4? Train the young women. Be an example. Teach them. But there's so many churches, young women have no one to go to. Older women are not godly women. They've not built themselves up in the Word of God. Have no one to turn to for the right kind of guidance. So they talk to the people they work with, or they talk to the people at school, or their friends that they meet on social media. But here you can see the impact of a godly woman and a godly family upon younger women. Verse 4, so that she may encourage or train the young women, note, to love their husbands and to love their children. Here's how you conduct yourself in the family. This is the duty of older godly women. And then, and you don't have to be older in the 80s. Sometimes older may be in the 20s because all the other women are younger, or the older women are not, have not prepared themselves. And so you may be the quote-unquote older woman who's teaching the responsibilities of motherhood and daughterhood to young women. Note in verse 5, what impact does the family have on God according to the end of verse 5? That's right. They're Christians. They're church people. You ought to see what goes on in their house. I live across the street. I can hear them. I know how they talk about one another, treat one another. But they go to church now. Yes, sir. That really leaves a good impact upon God and His Word and its impact in the human life, doesn't it? So if you love the Lord and you want to serve God, you say, well, I'm going to learn how to lead a song or pray. Of course, you women can't do that. So maybe you'll say, well, I'll prepare the Lord's Supper. Good, good service deed. Or I'll teach a class. Good, very needed. By the way, they've got several women right now that are teaching the young classes just so you folks in the family can be in here today. I have a high respect for them. But what about when you go home and you interact with your mate or your children or your parents? That is vital and important. All right, we answered number 6 already. Look at Malachi 2. We talk about this man, his prayers are not heard. What if I'm a preacher or an elder or a leading man of the congregation and I do something that God hates? I mean, he hates it. How did that impact my relationship with God? Look at Malachi chapter 2. Look at verse 16. Now, the English Standard Version translates it differently. And I've checked all the major versions. None except the English Standard Version translates it the way they do. I don't know that it's justified, but we'll note something here in a moment. God says, I hate divorce. That's King James, New King James, New American Standard, American Standard. So, I hate divorce. ESV changed it to where the man hates his wife. Clearly, based on these major translations, God said, I hate it. But even with the ESV, there's another part to that phrase. To him who covers his vile, his garment with, now this is the New American Standard, says wrong. But most of the other versions, including the ESV, says violence. What about a man that does violence to his family? So, well, he don't beat them. He don't slap his wife. He don't burn his children. But if he divorces, he causes violence. That's violent. The impact of divorce on a family, on children, on a man and a woman is maybe hard to ever measure. But he's with a priest. Bring me your sacrifices. I'll offer them to Jehovah. Think God was pleased with that? God's concerned what goes on when we go home and close the doors. What goes on in our families. Young people in this audience, look. I know you all hope to have a good family. Got several young people in our audience today. I hope we have some more as the week progresses, as the days, weeks progress. I know you think someday I'm going to have a family. It's going to be like mom and dad's family. It's going to be a good family. I know this is no revelation to you, but let me tell you, having a good family is not a matter of genetics because you have the same blood. If you want to have a good family someday, we've been reading about how you do it. You go to the manual of the Maker. That's why young people, you may say, why am I in here? I'm not married. Hopefully you'll be married someday. But what kind of mate you'll be and what kind of mate you'll choose. You know, you may want a good relationship and you may do everything right to make it that. But if the mate you choose does not have that standard, you may be able to maintain the covenant, as Jamie talked about, which you should do everything in your power to do. But that doesn't mean you're going to have a good relationship. So when you choose a mate, you young man, you get old enough to start thinking about that. You say, whew, she's pretty. Or the young women look at a young boy and say, man, that guy's handsome. Boy, I'd like to get married to somebody like that. It's fine to think they're pretty and handsome. That's great. Nothing wrong with that. But there are more important things to look at, choosing a mate. Do they have any respect for the standards of the Creator that ensures a good relationship? So find a mate, not just that goes to church, but seeking the will of God. Somebody with a good heart that wants to do right. Just going to church doesn't mean they're that kind of person. But have respect for God's word, a healthy respect for it. Yes. Do what? I did, didn't I? John brought up the fact that I skipped 3 and 4. But let's go back up and pick that up. In 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3. The first part of this chapter is about what? You know, this is a good class of Bible students. It's about what? Qualification of elders. Elders are leaders. And so they can have an important impact on whether or not a church is what verse 15 said God wants it to be. To be a pillar and support of the truth. And that truth is in verse 16. It's the truth about Jesus. Believed, understood, and reflected in the lives of his people. That's what all 1 Timothy is about. So he's talking to Timothy about the kind of men that qualify for that capacity. So when you get to verse 4 and 5, what's one of the qualifications of this leader? Okay, kind of man that knows how to manage his family with dignity. Not with a whip or a cord, but with dignity and honor. That they respect his leadership. God made this a quality of the kind of man that a congregation should appoint for leadership. That's how important the family is. So you can have a church with 50 or 100 people, but not have any qualified leaders because of the family. Or guys that are put into the eldership that ought not be because their family's a mess. How needed is qualified leaders across this land in churches of Christ? In verse 2, what's another family quality? Husband of one wife. If I understand that text, he's not simply talking about married only once, although some versions translate it that way. The word married is not there. What did Paul actually write? It's translated husband of one wife, but what did he actually write in their language? Man of one woman. He's a one woman man. He can have one wife and still be a ladies' man. But he's a man that's devoted to his wife and his attentions and his speech, what he looks at, how he treats her. He's a one woman man. And so again, impacting whether or not a church is going to be the pillar and ground of the truth of Jesus Christ. Mark 6. Look at Mark 6. Now, I tell you what, folks, we've got churches that will never, where preachers will never be able to preach the truth on marriage and divorce because of the leadership. Their family's a wreck. They've been divorced. They've got children who are divorced. They don't want that kind of preaching and teaching. And so that church will never be a pillar and support of the truth as it ought to be because of the family situation amongst this leadership. Over in Mark chapter 6, you have this story we're all familiar with, verse 17 through 29. Why did Herodias want John beheaded?
He married his brother's wife.
Right. John the Baptist said something about her family relationship that she didn't like. And so she's out to get him killed. And so we ask this question, if Herodias was a member of a local church, what effect might that have on the preaching and teaching? So a preacher gets up and preaches about what Jesus said, you marry, you don't divorce. If you divorce, you put your wife in danger of committing adultery. Whoever marries the woman you put away commits adultery. This woman in the congregation has a sister or a mother or a daughter who's in that circumstance or a son. I don't like that kind of preaching. Can she have an influence? What if she's the wife of an elder? Or the wife of the preacher? In this case, the wife of the king. And so it can definitely have an impact on the church. And you'll note, as you read these texts, it says, she held a grudge against him. King James says, had a quarrel against him. The New King James says, held it against him. And this word actually means to be enraged with. In other words, she was mad. She intended to get even. You tell me I don't have a right to be married to this man? That's right. I'm the queen. Kill him. And preachers have been suspended from duty because of a woman in a congregation. So it can impact the local church and whether it's what God intended it to be. We read Deuteronomy 4:6. What did he say observing these statutes would do? We read that a while ago. Make them wise. Recognize their wisdom. That's right. And so if you want to say, I want to, you know, especially a young person getting married, 18, 20, 25, how much do they know from personal experience about family life? And it may be terrible. Maybe they grew up in a bad family. I need a book that I can read. You can buy 10,000 books on the family. But I need a book that I can read that'll tell me exactly where to start and how to progress so 20 years later, I'm not sorry. Here's a book that'll make you wise about how you ought to think about your mate, your children, your life together, what your priorities ought to be. Look at Deuteronomy 10:13. This is a good verse to remember. Deuteronomy 10:13. Write it down somewhere. It's just one to remember. One of these times, maybe this morning, I don't know yet. We're talking about people criticizing God. They don't like His laws. But look at Deuteronomy 10:13. Moses telling these people to keep the Lord's commandments and His statutes, which I'm commanding you today. Why? You're good. For your good. Well, it's for God's honor. It is. But what honors God benefits us. For your good. I don't understand all of God's laws. That is why He made them. I don't understand them. But I don't have to. I just know whatever He said, it's for our good. And so we have number 9, the state of the family. Just look at what's going on in the United States. The rise of divorce. So many times people don't even get married. Sexual unfaithfulness, illegitimate births, abandoned children. You young people probably go to school with people that don't have a secure home, don't know who their father is, suffer abuse, neglect, some run away from home. Of course, there's homosexuality, lesbianism, pornography, abundant in our society because of the failure to cherish the family relationship. We'll talk some more about those kind of things as we continue our study. And then this last thing, just diminishing the importance, the time, and the effort given to cultivating the family life and family responsibilities. Got more important things to worry about. How am I going to get a good job and make a lot of money? Or how can I get a raise? Or where can I live and enjoy the countryside? Remember Sodom? Oh, that place looks wonderful over there. What did it cost you? Your family. And so that's the society in which we live. So we have number 10, just consider the state of the families you know. You were your young people, you're probably familiar somewhat with the people you associate with at school or in your sports. And even the husbands and wives, families you know, if you go into their homes, are the mother and dad happy? Or just an occasional smile and laughter? Are they happy, genuinely happy? Are there good relationships? I wish we had time to read about, I've got some notes here about the potential of the family. It's a real good talk about how families start out on a high note and in time they decide it's all a delusion. But we won't do that. We'll just look at Genesis 1:31. This will be one of the keynotes of our entire study. Genesis 1:31, what did God say about His creation? Did that include husbands and wives and marriage? Yes. Very good. So if families aren't very good, what's the problem? Marriage is not the way God designed it. The way the family, when the family is as God designed it, it's very good. So we ask the question, do you believe your family can be very good? Hopefully all of you can say, it's already very good. And that's wonderful if that's the case. But oftentimes sitting in a church building like this and in a class, it's not. And people live in denial. I've told you on a number of occasions, I've taught right here in this building about some of the dangers that confront young or married people. And had someone speak up in the class, say, that'll never happen to us. We're in love and so forth. Wasn't long they're divorced. I don't know if they're serving God at all today. So it can happen to you. And so what does James 1:25 tell us to do? Look at it if you're not familiar with it. What does James 1:25 tell us to do? Look in the mirror. What's the mirror? This right here. God's Word. The perfect law of liberty. And look, see where I'm at. What kind of husband am I? What kind of wife am I? What kind of young person am I in my family? What kind of grandfather am I? Here's the standard. Look. Don't just look and then forget. That's what the text says. They just forget what kind of person they are and go on their way. Look and make changes. That's our study on the family this quarter. Hopefully it'll be of some help in that regard. Now, we know that this is the source to help make a good family. And we need to pay attention to that objective. So we got right down to the end of your lesson. How should we approach a study to successfully accomplish that goal? We're going to be talking about, the Lord willing, in our next lesson, the proper approach to this study. Some very important concepts. I hope you can be here Wednesday night. Hope you'll do the lessons. I know some of you already answered the questions, and that's really encouraging. But if you'll do the work on these lessons, it'll be a help to the class as to you as well. Thank you for your good attention this morning.